This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
Engineer said, you are with Safe and Sound Project. And so let's just tell the listeners, what is Safe and Sound Project?
Okay. Well, it is a project that's been developing over the past 3 years, and I could talk more about that, how it actually first started. And what it is, it's a group of people who are producing media around stories about police violence in our city and people's interactions with the police, and also stories about resistance to police brutality and violence in our city.
And this was funded with a grant through RAC, right? And people may know RAC is the Regional Arts and Culture Council. And so I also know that there's an all-woman team that's working to put this together. How did the partnership come about?
Sure. Well, I suppose it was in 2010. I had just moved back to town from being out of town for a year. I teach at colleges and universities, and I had been teaching in Pennsylvania. And when I got back to town, it was the summer of 2010, and there had just been several police shootings that the community was talking about, protesting. There was an organization called Fire Fresh Hour that had risen up to, you know, get some community action moving in that direction. And so I was involved with a lot of these organizers in different ways and interested in what they were working on. I'm a video maker, filmmaker. I make short pieces that are very often about my own life or somewhat autobiographical. So it's a kind of natural connection for me to start working with people who are around me and start to work on projects with them. And I had worked on a project several years ago with Rose City Cop Watch where I'd made a training video for them, a Know Your Rights and Police type training video. Yeah, I'll send it to you.
And
I had worked on them with that. So I was kind of around this group of people who were talking about this topic. And so a few different ideas had been bounced around. You know, I'm always looking for ways to use my skills to help out organizers working on issues that I think are important to me in the community. And so as much as I also like to work on my own personal things. And so other ideas had been moving around. You know, what if we made a website that was a place to collect, like, community-generated video, YouTube video, you know, stuff that people upload themselves. What if we did that? Or, you know, just lots of different ideas have been coming, moving around. But eventually, I was in the site. I was at the site of the Kendra James shooting one day with somebody who, this is also in 2010, who would told me the story in such a moving way in the space, in this place where it happened, that I thought, wow, I'd really like to know more about all of these places where this kind of thing has happened. Why don't I know more about this was really the first question. You know, I had only lived in Portland a few years. And so, and I hadn't known much more about that story until then. And so, so anyway, you know, me, organizers started saying, eventually led to, let's collect more of these stories. Let's either produce them ourselves or interview people and let's collect them all in one place, like make all these short pieces that could be on a website. We thought it would be mostly audio at first, which is why the project actually is called Safe and Sound. It's because we thought it would be mostly an audio project. But, you know, video, I'm more of a visual thinker. It moved more in a video direction, but that's not to say we can't still have audio pieces on our website. But the idea would be to collect them all on a website so that people can go and learn about these in an accessible way, you know, like people like to click on a movie and watch it. And
Very cool. If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a call at 503-231-8187. I'm talking to Julie Perrini. She's with Safe and Sound, which is a project that will have a opening reception on May 18th at the Place Gallery, which is on the third floor of the Pioneer Gallery. Ta-da! We have a caller on the line. And we're going to go to the phone line. Good morning, Joanne. Welcome to KBOO.
Oh, Joanne, I need a body massage for the rage in my body for the police propaganda I'm experiencing in my building. In the May newsletter, there are 6 well-written paragraphs by the present manager who has gotten help to get a college degree. It's well-written. And it says, in the beginning, it says, the community meeting, Jacob Rostoff, Southeast Neighborhood Crime Prevention Coordinator, and Officer Colbert, Neighborhood Response Team, paid us a visit and shared some valuable information. It's all full of propaganda and supporting the police. But here's the other part she put in the news, or in the newsletter, written by a Robert Peel. I don't know, it was a long time ago. The police are the public, and the public are the police. The police being only members of the public who are paid to give a full-time attention to duties which are incumbent on every citizen in the interest of community welfare and existence. I want to kill the ignorance and stupidity in his manager's mind, but I got to get off the air and take care of myself. Bye.
Bye. Joanne sounds like she's having a hard morning. Let's get back to the project. So the project uses audio, video, and pictures to actually tell the stories of these incidents of violence. Can you tell me kind of, so at the opening reception, what's going to happen? Are people going to be able to click and see stuff, or what's going to, what's the visual going to be?
Right. Well, this is the part I'm most excited about. I mean, you know, a lot of the ways I work end up responding to situations I have available to me, or, you know, I kind of am flexible with how I'm going to present what I'm doing. And so in this case, we have this opportunity to work in a gallery space that is all dark and has one large projection. And so we decided to make a long video that brings together all of these videos that we're working on. So on the website, there'll be different pages where you can click and you can learn about, you know, what is the Albina Ministerial Alliance, you know, what is all of these different organizations, who is Zarin Campbell, or was Zarin Campbell. And so, but at the show, it'll be like a small theater in this gallery space where you can sit and watch the whole thing if you like. It's like an hour long. And we're trying to put it together in a way so that when you show up at any moment, you could kind of get on board with what's being told to you. You know, it's not like you have to start at 4 o'clock and stay for the whole hour to really understand it. This has been an interesting challenge for me to try to address, you know, because we have this space where this video will be on a loop just all day long, you know. And so, and that's one thing you'll see. And then, but we also are working to get a little computer set up so that people could see the website. But I like this. It's almost like a teaser for the website. Like, go learn more. And we'll also have a book of photographs. Somebody who has been working with us has made a book, like an artist book of photographs, all of these sites, like many more. We've only covered like 4 different stories in depth, but he's gone to 60 different sites, one of our members here, and has made still images of these different sites.
And so are these all people who've experienced police violence in Portland?
Some have, the people who worked on it to make the project.
The 60.
Oh, right. Yes.
Yes. Yeah. Wow. I'm looking forward to
it's a beautiful book. Yeah.
Wow. Wow. We're going to go back to the phone line. Hello, Ryan. Welcome to KBOO.
It's Brian.
Oh, Brian. I'm sorry, Brian. How are you today?
That's okay. Ryan's fine.
No, I want to call you by your right name.
It's most of it. So listen, you know what? I'm going to be very critical here.
Okay.
And my objection to this whole thing is not only... And I appreciate you doing this. If I didn't know anything about police violence, I would be at your opening and I'd be looking at all this stuff. But police violence, especially what Portland has experienced, is just, it's completely unacceptable. It should have been stopped when it started. I mean, the day after it started, you know, and I'm talking about Mr. Chase dying, you know, in the middle of the street. And, you know, I have to say this, is to create art out of it while it's still going on and still prevalent and not stopping, and the fact that we're paying, as taxpayers, we're paying the penalties for the police.
Right.
They have no consequences for this at all. And I really honestly believe, I think people need to look at this. By documenting this in an artistic sense or any sense, and looking at it and not stopping it, we are glorifying it. And, you know, the thing is until, you know, I sound like an old guy, until it happens to us, oh, wow, this is what's going on. Now, and I want to point something else out, and I'm going to get a little esoteric here, but, you know, I am sure the Cleveland police, where are those three victims sat in, you know, abduction for 10 years, had a really strong stop and frisk policy, you know. But as far as doing real police work, I want to know how many people are participating in this kind of behavior in our city and not getting any, you know, because the police are too busy beating up poor, weak, mentally ill, and homeless people. And
well,
that's my comment.
Thank you so much for calling. I know that Julie and I both have some opinions on what you just said, so we appreciate you sharing yours.
Okay, have a nice day.
You do the same. Do you want to go first?
If you have thoughts to share, you can go ahead.
I do have thoughts. In fact, I thought about, I think the caller is wrong. Video sometimes makes accessible to people information that they would never, ever, ever see. I know that as someone who really follows police violence, James Chassie's case just touched me to my heart. And I read everything and followed everything. But it wasn't until I saw Alien Boy that I realized just how fundamentally corrupt our public safety system is. And so so I think using art makes information that people don't want to know about much more accessible.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So that was my first thought.
Yeah, I have a lot of thoughts on this. I mean, I've decided to commit my life to doing this type of work, and I don't mean police work. I mean making
the invisible visible
in some ways, you know, or just, you know, in working with, I mean, I'm an artist, I'm a professor, I believe that in the transformative power of artworks. And so, you know, that you can change your mind about something if you learn something new, that you can be touched in an emotional way, and that can really encourage people to learn more about something. And so so this is a question I've dealt with my whole life and plan to continue to deal with. And so why do it at all?
Well, know? I was going to say, as an artist, you must go through that. You know, will anybody show up?
But. Well, and of course. And so there's, and actually, this is all much more complicated than that kind of attitude also. I mean, you know, we're talking really vaguely about this. This is a video about police violence. I mean, what does that really look like? I mean, I think maybe it would be best to actually see it and then assess the success or failure of it. And then we could engage in a dialogue about it. But I mean, so those are some thoughts I have about it. But in general, I think that also, artists using their skills to work with community groups and social movements is something that is also can make for a really powerful combination, too, in terms of reaching more and more people.
I absolutely agree with that. And I also think that it opens up different demographic groups, right? Because young people experience art differently than older people. And so maybe it creates those opportunities for that cross-generational learning. Well, we're going to go back to the phone line because we do, in fact, have a John on the line. Good morning, John. Welcome to KBOO.
Good morning. Great topic.
Thank you.
Proud member of KBOO, and encourage anybody that's listening to please donate to a great community radio station.
Thanks, John.
And my observation is, I'm not a lawyer, but it would seem like that we could investigate, hopefully some good legal people out there. It seems like the city of Portland, like the previous caller brought up, the city of Portland and the taxpayers are all the time having to pay huge lawsuits for the police being negligent and aggressive and violent on especially a lot of mentally ill or racial situations. And possibly we could make the police themselves pay some of these lawsuits out of their union funds or out of their retirement system, and so they'd have some money and skin in the game besides the taxpayers. Well, maybe it would make them a little more responsible for their actions, especially that James Chassis deal. You know, that was just horrible violence, and hopefully we can explore that situation.
Well, thank you so much. We appreciate your call. And James Chassis is one of the cases that's included in the Safe and Sound Project. And so, and in fact, the Safe and Sound Project installation will be accessible until July 6th. And so hopefully people will get down to the Pike Gallery and check that out. But thank you so much. The caller also raised a point. I think the listening audience may know that the Department of Justice Civil Rights Division came in and did an investigation, a 14-month investigation of Portland Police Bureau, and found that Portland officers have a pattern and practice of using excessive force between against people who have or perceive to have mental illness. And so right now, there's a settlement agreement that's being worked out. It hasn't been filed with the federal courts yet. So that process is happening at the same time that Alien Boy has been shown throughout this community, and hopefully will be back again. Now, Safe and Sound adds another dimension and perspective to this. At the same time that the city's going through their budget talks, at the same time that the Portland Police Association's contract is set to expire June 30th of this year. And so, in my mind, this project is coming about at the perfect time because there's so much going on around police accountability. And what I wanted to say to the caller was there's a disconnect when we continue to pay out these multi-million-dollar settlements and the police constantly say we did nothing wrong and we followed policy. So when unarmed people end up dead and that's policy, that's wrong. And so we either need to change the policy or we need to change the police. But something has to change radically. And if you have a comment, I'll take it. Otherwise, we'll go back to the phone line.
Let's see what's on the phone.
Okay, next to the phone. Hello, Jane Doe. Welcome to KBOO.
Yes, thank you very much. Can you all hear me all right?
Yes, we can hear you just fine.
Okay. I have some positive and negative things to say on police education, but I think they're extremely crucial and worth calling in to tell you all. And before starting, I want to agree with John. I am a contributor, and I hope to send in my pledge in June that I made in March.
Well, thank you so much.
Yay, cable. Okay, so I've been able to attend two different trainings that had police, and they were domestic violence trainings. And so there's some positive and negative to say. And the positive is that it's a brilliant police officer from Nashville, Tennessee, and he does training all over the United States on domestic violence and explains that many times the police will actually end up arresting the woman because, for example, they'll see a woman with a frying pan when they come in the kitchen. They don't know that he had already had a knife or something. Mark Wynn explains what really goes on with domestic violence. But at the training, we had many rookie policemen in the training, and there was one policeman, probably in his middle 20s, who was truly, truly a male chauvinist. He was thinking, like, oh, these women deserve it. And so in the evaluation I wrote, I think he should have counseling immediately. Mm. And then the second domestic violence training I was at, we worked with policemen in our small group. And one of the policemen, we were doing this scenario, and he said, oh, that lady's a party girl. And the scenario we were doing, it was totally inappropriate what he was saying. But I do want to say one thing. He was coming off a shift. He had worked all night long. So I think there's the other part of it about the police fatigue. So I hope that these have been useful comments.
Thank you so much. Yes, I think they were extremely useful comments. Any analysis on those?
Well,
what do you make from What's your assessment of that based on those experiences?
You mean me, right?
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay, I believe that there's still a tremendous amount of education that policemen need, and that, of course, that costs money. At the same time, I do believe, like we had a Democracy Now earlier, there is a lot of toxicity with male culture of rape. There is a lot of education policemen need for women relationships and relationships with minorities. So it's kind of a mixed bag. There needs education, yet there's also the toxic culture that's still very prevalent.
Yes. Thank you so much. Appreciate your call.
You're very welcome.
Have a great day.
Thank you.
Julie, any comments? You want to go back to the phone line?
Oh, no, I was interested. I was just waiting for her to say what the positive thing was.
Yeah, oh, right.
She says positive and negative. I guess yeah. The training happening at all, maybe?
maybe, that they're becoming more aware. Mm-hmm. But it didn't sound like those two examples she gave were people who had their minds opened by participating, which is one of the other things that the community has been asking for a long time. We think that community members should partner in training classes with community police officers. It is insane to have police training for a culture that does not take into account community norms. Mm-hmm. And so that's one of the things the community has been asking for us for quite some time. So we'll see. And so it would help if there was someone that was a domestic violence professional training with the police. That would make that a much more effective training, and they would call out that behavior. They would not allow that mm-hmm. behavior to continue. But I think if the police are conducting that training, it's just, you know, the good old boys having fun.
Mm-hmm.
So back to the phone line. Hello, Robin. Welcome to KBOO.
Oh, hi.
Hi.
I wonder if you could say, if the guest could say her name again.
Julie.
My name is Julie.
Okay, so I think it would be great to hear a little bit more about one of your projects, because it seems like in the introduction to the show, you talked about how you directly experienced the people that have told you stories about mm-hmm. the incidents. And I thought it'd be great to know why it'd be worthwhile to explore your projects, to really get a closer look at it and not just around what people are talking about and the issues. And I'll just take the answer off the air.
Thank you for your call.
Okay, so the question is just tell us more about the project, maybe.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you talk a little bit more about...
Yeah, sure.
Right.
More specifics.
More specifics, uh-huh. Sure.
Well, so over the past couple of years, the people I've been working with, this collective, and I have interviewed a lot of different Portland community members who have either directly experienced police violence or other kinds of intimidation, or family members who are survivors of other cases of egregious violence, and so, or we've talked to community members who have spoken out against police violence, and so. And created short videos about all of these different things. And so to get more concrete, we've designed four different videos that are about cases where there have been either deadly shootings or beatings. That's the James Chassie case, the Aaron Campbell case, the Keaton Otis case, and the Kendra James story. Mm-hmm. And then we also, though, wanted to kind of broaden out the picture that we're creating here. You know, Alien Boy is a wonderful documentary because it goes into such depth about one particular case, but we wanted to look more broadly at the kind of way excessive use of force is actually a routine. It's something that's done over and over. And so to show that, we wanted to talk to lots of different people who have been... who've experienced that kind of thing. And so we broadened it out to include people who had stories, you know, where they were, you know, I don't know, jumped at a protest or by police or right. So, or somehow involved in an interaction that you know, turned out in a way that was very unexpected to the person and seemed out of, not seemed to be excessive and not necessary. So we have those kind of community stories, and then we're actually really looking for more of those. Those are very interesting to me. They're and not hard to find, actually.
No, really so, not hard. And I was going to ask, I don't know if you've interviewed anyone from the First Unitarian Church, but there was like an N8 march and lots of young high school kids and seniors were pepper sprayed by Portland police and they weren't doing anything. They were just standing there and the police just came up and started pepper spraying them. So those stories, unfortunately, are...
Well, and this project isn't over on May 18th. I mean, this is kind of really just a way to put it out there. It's like, here's what we've got started. And we are definitely looking to continue this and keep adding to this kind of archive of stories about this particular history and practice in our city. And so, and just to add to the third part of it was just that we also, like I mentioned, wanted to also not just include this one type of story of people who've been impacted by police violence, but what are people doing to organize against that and change things. And so that's why we included stories about Rose City Cop Watch, Portland Cop Watch, the AMA, actually, the Portland Community Liberation Front, which was an organization that was around about 10 years ago. And so far, that's where we're at, but we would love to continue.
Well, wonderful. I want to let you know what's coming up today on KBOO at 9 here, Press Watch, the news you're not supposed to know with Teresa Mitchell. At 9:30, A Deeper Look features firsthand stories of victims of U.S. drone attacks in Yemen. At 10 is Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15, Flashpoint has more critical analysis of President Obama's nominee for the next Secretary of Commerce. And we hear the weekly report on Occupy Palestine. At 11 on Between the Covers, Ellen Sussman talks about her new novel, The Paradise Guest House. And at 11:30, Words and Books feature a new comic book about Oregon's legendary governor, Tom McCall. Thank you, members, for your generous support during the last pledge drive. I'm okay. If you are not a member, you can become one by going to kboo.com and clicking the tip jar. And thank you very much. We have lots of callers stacked up, so we're going to just try to go back to back to back. Hello, Jack. Welcome to KBOO.
Yes, Julie, I think your work is important. It's important for artists to give an artistic rendering, to create an artistic rendering of the really critical events of our epoch. Not only to communicate to the people here and now, but in the future. I think I've been involved in some projects like this myself, and I know how hard it is to get people to show up for an artistic presentation of something that's really hard to think about. People want to, when people avoid when people go to taking an art. They usually want, and not always, but often they want to kind of escape from the horrible things in the world, and but they're still there. They don't go away really, and I think it's important for artists to render these things in genuinely artistic ways that are indelible, you know, things that will outlive us. Yeah. And remind us again, please, of the location of your installation.
I'm glad you asked.
It's at an artist-run space called Place Gallery, which is on which is at Pioneer Place Mall on the third floor. There are many empty storefronts there. It's an interesting space. It's been around for maybe a couple of years, and this one artist has gotten access to these, you know, former pottery barns and things like that, and has been using them to put on more challenging art shows, actually, you know, things like this or things that are experimental in nature.
Yeah, I know Gabe and Flora.
Oh, great.
Yeah. Right. It's in fact, the company I work with, Agnieszka Laska Dancers, I'm the resident composer, technical director. We screened some movies we made from productions that we created, The Fall 01 and Lamentacio. We screened those on the 10th anniversary of 9/11 in one of their gallery spaces.
Oh, great! Wow, that's great. Cool.
Yeah, right.
Well, thank you so much. Oh,
okay, good luck
comment?
with your show. I'm looking forward to it. And the there's an opening and reception.
Yeah, that's happening on May 18th. That's a Saturday from 6 o'clock to 9 o'clock. Come on by. Gabe makes cupcakes every time.
Hope to see you there.
Yeah,
thank you so much for the call. Have a good day. We're gonna go back to the phone line. Hello, William. Welcome to K Book. Hi, are you there?
Yeah.
Welcome. Hello, welcome.
Oh, this is Scott, yes.
Hi, Scott. How are you?
Oh, pretty good. Hey, I just want to make a comment. You have mentioned a few cases in the Kendra James case.
Right.
Well, the police officer became my property manager.
Uh-huh.
And he was tasked with the... Rick Bean was his name of the Knob Hill Apartments, and he was tasked to get rid of and clean out all the undesirables of my apartment complex. And so here is this person who's being rewarded, being highly paid as a sort of hire for mercenary to clean out apartment complexes. And obviously, I lived at that place for 10 years. I had pets, and everything was fine until this guy came in, and it was all about moving up the rents.
Right.
And so... I don't know all the details of the Kendra James case, but I know it was pretty ugly, and I believe that's what quit him being from a police officer, but he's continuing in a very undesirable profession as far as the state goes with no renter's rights and just cleaning out people to bring up our rents.
Wow.
So, yeah, so I just wanted to make that comment on the air.
Thank you.
This is the person that I think should be in jail for leaving Kendra James on the street before they called an ambulance.
Yes. Well, thank you so much. Appreciate your call.
All right. Thank you.
Have a good day.
Yeah.
We're going to go back to the phone line. Hello, William. Welcome to K-Boo.
Hi. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Do you have a comment or question?
Yes, I do. Actually, I just wanted to comment on an incident that I had about a week ago. I was arrested and really... an unfair arrest. I was the cop actually broke into my yard to get to me. And what I wanted to say is, you know, I come from a different country, and the world looks at America as the place to be, and that's why I came here. But over the last 20 years or so, it's been losing its, you know, the freedoms that the people came here to have are being taken away from us, and so much so that one doesn't even feel safe in his or her home because you can't even go into your home to protect yourself without the police thinking they have every right to go in there and do whatever they want. So I wanted to know from your panel what they had to say about that in terms of our civil liberties and, you know, what are the limits to the police? Uh-huh. You know, they basically grabbed me and threw me against the wall and that kind of stuff. And, I just didn't think it was fair because I didn't do anything wrong, and obviously, you know. So that was my comment.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much for your call. We appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
Have a great day. So, Julia, what do you think about what William's comments were?
Well, I mean, I'm definitely, you know, of course, sorry to hear that that has happened to him or that that ever happens to anybody, that they feel like their civil rights are violated or they're treated in a way that is dehumanizing or unfair or humiliating. And so, but in terms of other comments about that...
Well, I mean, he's certainly right. Like, whether we're talking at the federal level, right, with Homeland Security and then all the laws that we've passed that basically allows police unfettered access, we certainly are deporting more people today than we were 4 years ago. And I will also say that here locally, if you ever witness a traffic stop, which I did a month ago, I witnessed a traffic stop by the gang enforcement unit. Apparently, it takes 10 police officers to conduct a stop when they think drugs are involved. And so, and they come really armed like they're going to warfare. They come with weapons from head to toe. And it's all about intimidation. It's all about community control. And I think that's what this caller is speaking to. So when a community experiences that over and over and over again, and the systems that are supposed to protect them, which is the totally misnamed independent police review, because it's not independent, it doesn't review the police, and it doesn't conduct any independent investigations, the community gets frustrated because it's like, okay, if you can't use the system that's in place, what do you use? And for the community, it's been the courts, right? Mm-hmm. The court is where the community gets justice, not at City Hall, not with the police bureau, but the courts. Mm-hmm. Back to the phone line. Hello, Paul. Welcome to KBOO.
Yeah, good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah, this project sounds really good and promising to me. I'm really excited. I hope to be able to attend that. It started me thinking about some things, about the idea of making the invisible visible, and I was wondering if Julie might be interested in pursuing this line of thought, which is that, you know, if you look at these cop shows, like, you know, where these TV crews follow the police.
Oh, right, like cops.
Show these people in their most vulnerable and powerless position,
right?
And it's like so utterly degrading. And then on the other hand, you know, you have like these cop watch programs where you have, or just people happen to be on the streets, like with their cell phone or a video camera, and show the police. And you know, there's been attempts to make that illegal, you know, because they don't want the cops to show it. So you got on the, you know, the one hand, people trying in small ways generally to try to reveal what's happening, you know, in police departments all over the country, where, you know, obviously the police have the power, you know, and to back up the power of property and capital that has to be protected at all costs. And you have the people who are on the underside of that, who are being, you know, revealed by these cop shows in their moments of degradation by the powers that be. I was just wondering if Julie might have some reflections on that.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for your call. We appreciate it.
Yeah, those are great thoughts, and that's a great question. Well, first to speak to the idea of the making the invisible visible, I mean, that is something I have been thinking about for a long time. I often think of cameras as being like visibility machines, you know? Mm-hmm. And so this is an interesting place where, you know, a lot of different types. You can do a lot with the same tools, you know. You're talking about mass media in one way and how they use these tools of media production to make television. And we okay? and the types of representations that get put forward by that type of media that is corporately backed, and you know, and then there are places like KBOO, which are places where alternative media gets produced, also Portland community media, things like that, and where, you know, more people in a community can have access to media to produce their own media and make their own representations of themselves and tell their own stories. And I'm very interested in that, of course, and I'm linked to that. And so and where was I going with this? So there's this interesting place, though, where what I'm working on is not quite journalism. I think this is something, there are many, many questions and tensions that have come up throughout this project. And, you know, and this is one of them, this kind of difference between what is art and what is journalism, you know? And so, and both of these things are just very important. I've just kind of really experienced what the difference sort of is. I mean, the one thing about being able to do something that takes place like in an art gallery or like I'm working on, is the kind of thing where you just have a little more time. You know, we're not kind of really reporting what happened this morning. That is definitely necessary, and we need people to do that. I'm just working on something that is a little bit more reflective, and we can take our time with it and try to add more dimensions to it and try to make it something that will really affect people and touch people and get them interested in this topic. And so I think that got at some question about invisibility. But I think that, this is where it all connects, in the sense that all of these media tools can be used to bring more attention to more people, recognize more people, dignify more people. And I think the more that community places like KBOO, or the more that people take media tools into their own hands, the more that can happen. And I'm very, very, very interested in how you do this. How can you represent things that are, especially in this case, things that are invisible? Like, how do you show power? You know, this is partly what this is about, right? And so something that is kind of abstract, but you can make it more concrete by trying to create representations like we're doing. Yeah, I want to talk more about that later, maybe.
Yes, yeah. I'll look forward to that. We're going to go back to the phone line. Hello, Fred. Welcome to KBOO.
Hi. I was concerned about seniors' rights against this Patriot Act, how I can keep functioning, and the other seniors in the Lions and Cubs that I hear stories of, brutalization into your banks and stuff like that, even if you're on Social Security and a small amount of money there. They can't go after the big shots at Goldman Sachs, so they're skimming the bottom. And from little people like us, that we're once in the middle class. And I don't know who they is. It's something to do with the way the Patriot Act was originally set up. I think it's some a giant thing that they want to destroy the middle class of America, which there is none. And that's why that other people you had there came in on your program and said this is a place to be. Well, it once was, because it's really being, they don't want it to be. They don't want, they being the powers that be that have this huge amounts of money, and they don't want themselves known. They don't know who they are. A lot of them don't even live in the United States, but they came from here, that own giant corporations. I mean, look at General Electric owns 250 corporations, and beside NBC, so they get all this great publicity, and you can't fight this if you're a little guy like and seniors, and we're going to lose our Social Security. I don't know where we're going to go, but I guess I'll die in a prison, you know, just for being an American. I was born here in Portland, so what about people like that fellow who called in and wasn't, and minorities? A real attack upon people.
Well, and of course, the more we can divide and conquer, the less power we have. Because there's many more of us feeling what you're feeling than there are that are fat cats here locally.
Yeah.
But they keep us fighting among ourselves. So, right, if you just fight for senior programs and don't care about what happens to the kids, that doesn't create the community we want to live in. But if you're just fighting for kids and you could care less about what's happening to seniors and other people on fixed incomes, then you don't have the full picture either. And so what I hope is that at some point we really figure out how to work together, because, you know, we don't have corrupt politicians, but I think we have many times politicians with no political courage, no courage to do the right thing. And if we demanded it, guess what? It would probably happen. But thank you for your call, sir. I really
appreciate
it. Absolutely.
Thank you for saying that.
Thank you. Have a great day. It's, we're all feeling it. We're all catching it. And, you know, we can pretend that we're in the middle class, but we're kind of a paycheck away from not being in the middle class. And I could just feel that gentleman's pain.
Mm-hmm.
And so what's your hopes? What's your aspiration? So you've put all this blood, sweat, and tears into this project. We're going to have a premiere. And then what do you hope comes out of this?
Well, I hope there are more conversations like this. You know, that would be one of the first things. I'm really curious to see how people respond, what kinds of things community members think would be good to add to it, what kind of things are kind of problematic or complicated, or what kind of things are particularly compelling. So I'm definitely interested in that, just seeing how you know, it really has been a long time coming. So releasing it out into the world will be really exciting.
It's like letting your baby leave home, huh?
Yeah. And so it's and then I'm excited to continue working on it, you know, see what kind of, you know, we have a plan to meet up in the summer, the group of people I'm working with, to assess how it went and to figure out our next plan for the next year. You know, who do we want to talk to next? What stories do we want to try to pursue?
And how do you hope the community uses this project?
Mm-hmm. I suppose I guess I hope that I mean, I think it's the kind of thing because it doesn't just exist in one place. You know, it's not just like one video that you get on a DVD or see in a theater or see in a gallery. It will be on a website as like a tool, you know, like let's learn about all of these different things in Portland. Mm-hmm. So I hope it is used like that tool. This is one of the more interesting parts to me is that it has a life after the show, you know. And so I hope that it can be something that people can use together, you know, in a group situation. Let's all check this out together. I mean, you could have your own little screening, you know, just by going to our website and watching all of these videos with a group or something. Or you could, you know, send it on to people to use on their own. So those are some of the ways I hope people use it.
Lots of opportunity.
And actually, I really hope people, are inspired to make their own and add to it. Contact us. Tell us about the video you made. We'll put it on the site too, you know.
Very cool. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm certainly looking forward to using it as an educational tool because I think 90% of our population is just totally unaware that this is going on in our community, mm-hmm. and it's been going on for quite some time. So that's my goal. We have a caller on the line. Hello, Sheila. Welcome to KBOO.
Thank you. My comment goes back to TV's influence. I wonder how many of these police get their training sort of from what they see on TV, how police behave, and the exciting situations that the police on TV get themselves involved with. And if they don't look at it thinking, well, we don't have such excitement. I mean, they're not thinking this. It's just coming to them. And they want more excitement in their calls and whatever is going on. And they take on the TV behavior because that's what they see. Like, kids see violence on TV, and the police see the violence on the TV.
Well, it's interesting you say that because I do believe that that is absolutely true when it comes to the specialty units like the gang enforcement team. I mean, they roll in the ones that show up when peaceful protests are taking place. The fact that they show up looking like space aliens with all this hardware and weapons and like they're going to a war that they have no hope of coming back from, the fact that they even prepare in that manner tells you that their expectation is not for a peaceful outcome, right? They come in a very aggressive manner. So I think I'm not sure, quite frankly, if that's the influence of TV or if they are reinforcing that behavior through the training that they give to police officers.
Well, I'm not just saying that it's TV, but I think that that's one of these subliminal things, the messages that they get. And that becomes a part of it. And most police responses are probably very dull if they didn't make them non-so, you know, and I think they want more excitement. They join the police force because they want to be in exciting situations, but most of them are not exciting.
I think that what you're talking about is partly about the power that story has in our lives, like how stories kind of end up controlling or at least really influencing how we think about the world and how we think about who we are and what we do. And so I think it's time to change the story that you're talking about and start to tell new stories that can influence people in a way that might lead to greater equality among us all.
Yes. I also think that we need to do a better job of identifying the psychological makeup needed and desired to be a community police officer. Because there's a difference between being a law enforcement person and a community police officer.
Yeah, and how much domestic violence do you hear about police officers that they're involved in domestic violence? So they are not the kind of people that we should be having on our police force.
Yeah, thank you so much. We appreciate you calling in.
Thank you.
Have a fabulous day.
You too.
Thank you. And so, Julie, we just have a few minutes left, so I want to make sure once again we tell people the location. And you have a website that people that want to get more information about the project can go to?
Mm-hmm. Sure. This is the Safe and Sound Project, and it has a website that is all one word, safeandsound.verb.com. If you Google around, you'll find
you'll
Safe
find
and Sound
it, yes.
Portland. Yep. And we are having an opening event for the project on May 18th, Saturday, from 6 o'clock to 9 o'clock at Place Gallery, which is on the third floor of the Pioneer Place Mall downtown.
So tell me, what's been your biggest surprise putting this project together?
That's a great question. I believe that one of the biggest surprises has been how willing people have been to talk to us. A lot of what we're talking about is the worst thing that's ever happened to anybody, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I just didn't realize that so many people were waiting for someone to ask them to talk about it instead of trying to, you know, it's not, I mean, sure, people might also have attitudes where they're not ready to talk about it, but
right.
But way more people have been willing to come forward and share their stories than I had expected.
Well, I think that says something about the quality of the team that you're working with, that people were forthcoming, because mm-hmm. people, just talking to Shirley Isidore, Kendra James' mom, on Sunday, for the 10-year anniversary. And I should mention two things before we leave. Mm-hmm. Just talking to her, just this year, is she ready to come out and be public and talk about her experience with her daughter?
Mm-hmm.
It took her 10 years to get to a place where she could publicly have that conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And so on that note, I wanted to remind people that Keaton Otis, it will be 3 years this Sunday, May 12th, the death of Keaton Otis at the hands of Portland Police. And his family is organizing a third-year anniversary celebration of his life at Miracles Club from 5 to 6:30. Also, next week on the 16th is the next City of Portland budget forum. There will be a community pie event prior to the budget form, because their goal is to tell the City of Portland to make the pie bigger, and so they're going to be giving out slices of pie to community members that come early to get a seat for that budget form. So I wanted folks to know that that stuff is coming up in our community. And Julie, I want to say, when I first heard about your project, you were just so warm and so open and, you know, and so inviting. It was easy to connect other people to this project. So thank you for that. And I look forward to continuing to work with you when this is over. And again, you teach what at Portland State?
I teach video production in the School of Art and Design.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Wanted to make sure we gave a shout out to your day job.
Right. I got to go over there right now. Yep.
So any final words you want to leave? We've still got 2 minutes or so. You want to, I'm still wanting to know kind of what the big surprise was, and if there's mm-hmm. What's the next project? Got the next one on in here?
Well, I'm actually always working on several projects at once. You know, towards the end of a project, I usually focus in, like right now.
Mm-hmm.
Like I mentioned earlier, I also work on kind of personal projects that are mm-hmm. about my own life and autobiographical. And so I've been doing that my whole life. I mean, I was kind of always that kid who was 16 years old and playing around with cameras and things. And so, concurrent with this project, I've been working on a project that is kind of a diary video, you know, based on my own daily life, but is specifically looking at whiteness or being white or racial identification in my own life, you know.
Uh-huh.
And so I have this project called White Lady Diaries coming up, which is about my life. And so that's what I'm excited to work on this summer, is to really kind of use the fact that I shoot a lot of video every day with a small camera I carry around, and kind of reflect on that and kind of learn more about, you know, what role race plays in my everyday interaction.
Wow, I'm looking forward to that one too.
Sorry to move it in a whole other direction. It's not really a whole other direction, but
no, I mean it is fascinating, because it's again one of those things that, you know, A, you don't actually have to pay attention to, but the fact that you are and that you are being thoughtful about it. I can't wait to see what that project turns up. I want to also let our listeners know that next week I will be interviewing Walter Mosley. So you may want to tune in for that particular program because I'm excited about that. He's one of my favorite authors, and we're going to be talking to him about his brand new Easy Rollins book that is just hit the bookstores. Thank you again, Julie. It has been such a pleasure having you here. I want to thank you so much for the work that you're doing in the community. I think this project will, in fact, make a difference. I think people are going to learn a lot. I am Joanne Hodesty. You've been listening to Voices from the Edge. It has been my extreme pleasure to be here, and I'll see you next week. Same time, same place, same station. Have a great day. Stand up for your rights. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight. Preacher man, don't tell me heaven is under the earth. I know you don't know what life is really worth. It's an all that glitter is gold. After story had never been told. So now you see the light. Hey, stand up for your right. Come on, get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up. Sky. Take away everything and make everybody feel high.
Hi, and good morning. It is KBOO Portland, a minute before 9 o'clock. Coming up at 9:30 today on A Deeper Look, host Linda Olson Osterlin looks at first-hand stories of victims of U.S. drone attacks in Yemen with Ibrahim Katabi of the Center for Constitutional Rights. At 10, it's Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15 on Flashpoints, Tim Anderson, whistleblower on the financial and bank fraud, talks about Hyatt tycoon Penny Pritzker, who was nominated by Obama to be the next Secretary of Commerce, and the weekly report on occupied Palestine with Nora Barrows-Friedman and the electronicintifada.net. At 11, on Between the Covers, host Lee Ann Krantz welcomes Ellen Sussman, author of the new novel, The Paradise Guest House. And at 11:30, it's Words and Pictures. To commemorate the centennial of legendary Governor Tom McCall, Know Your City, formerly the Dill Pickle Club, has commissioned a comic book. Author Sarah Merck, and historian Doug Kent Crispin will be in the studio to tell stories about this larger-than-life figure. But first, it's Press Watch with news you're not supposed to know. Teresa Mitchell is up next on KBOO.
Particles on the Wall.
An exploration of the effects of nuclear technology on the Pacific Northwest and the world.
Particles on the Wall.
An exhibit of art, literary works, science, and historical memorabilia that describes the human and environmental impact of the Hanford Nuclear Reservation.
Particles on the Wall.
May 3rd through June 14th, second floor gallery in the EcoTrust building.
Particles on the Wall.
Co-sponsored by Oregon Physicians for Social Responsibility and KBOO Community Radio.
Particles on the Wall.
Information can be found online at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the page under Community Events.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Yellow Pages, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New mobile applications available for iPhone and Android. For more information, you can visit pdxgyp.org. KBOOPortland.com.
Also, thanks to a grant from Merrill Hurst University's new Bachelor of Arts in Media and Film Studies, where you can explore how media in all forms affect not only how we view the world, but how we shape it. You'll learn the power of media and how you can use that power to become a participant in change. Now accepting applications. Details at merrillhurst.edu/KBOO.
This is Press Watch, a weekly counter-propaganda and left opinion program here on your people-supported free radio station, KBOO Portland, KBOO Community Radio, where the community gets together and makes radio. I'm Teresa Mitchell. Join me for a brief peek behind the video veil of monopoly media manipulation and an examination of the news you're not supposed to know, giving you the tools to destroy billionaire rule. You know, we're not just radio anymore. We're a website, kboo.fm. And you might be listening to me on kboo.fm right now. And if you are, then I encourage you to open a tab and kick down a few dollars. You can see the little tip jar over there on the very colorful, splashy web page on the right upper part. And I wonder sometimes if people know how many audio programs you can get on archive. That's a really fun thing to do. If you want an archived PressWatch program, then go to that search bar, which is the little airplane. A little biplane is carrying a tag, and it says search, and, well, it has a little search symbol. And, of course, you can put in PressWatch, all lowercase, PressWatch, and it'll give you a list of audio going back weeks and weeks and weeks, and that can be pretty handy. We need to change the fact that KBOO is still kind of an in secret around here. It's kind of cool in a way, but, you know, KBOO can't afford to be. We can't afford to be a secret anymore. And so I suggest that we maybe do things like lawn signs. I want you to contact me through KBOO.fm and figure out how to do that. And tell me if you are interested in maybe putting up some lawn signs and just letting this area know that there is this fantastic community radio station. Not only that we're still here, but that we're here in the first place, because lots of people just never heard of KBOO Portland. You can really help with that. And then maybe we can get some funds rolling in here. I know that we can one way or another. Another thing I've been thinking about is Radio Bingo. I'm not going to tell you more about that. I'm just going to let you think about that. We have a gaming license. We can do that. We could do Radio Bingo. Contact me about that, kboo.fm. Going to Press Watch proper, then, U.S. Air Force General Mark Welsh claimed on Tuesday that a staggering number of non-consensual sexual assaults in the U.S. military were somehow the fault of consensual sex, which he called the hookup mentality. Here's the quote. Ready? Some of it is the hookup mentality of junior high even, and high school students now, which my children can tell you about from watching their friends and being frustrated by it, end quote. General Welsh, speaking at a Senate